It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And I'm calling in this morning from the road, as I sometimes like to say. I'm calling in from Juneau, Alaska. And if you hear something outside beyond the microphone here this morning, it's the call of a raven, and I'm not kidding you. So, Juneau, I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Southeast Alaska, the cruise ship industry, fishing, tourism. But then for next week's show, I actually will have been on the water in a very small boat for a week, touring around Admiralty Island in Southeast Alaska. So I'll have lots of stories for you a week from now. But in the meantime, this is what you can do in Alaska if you're lucky. You land in Alaska, as we did a couple days ago. And before it got dark, we checked into our hotel. Before it was dark, we drove 4.2 miles south, down south of Juneau, along the coast, past the monstrous cruise ships, which I'll talk about in a moment. 4.2 miles, and we crossed a little creek, and we got out, and the tide was right, and within 20 minutes, two of us each had caught a salmon. As it grew dark, the only interesting part about it, from the non-fishing, was we get out of the rental car, and we put our rod together, and we fly rod together, and we started to head for the mouth of the river, and a guy pulls out of the parking lot and says, "Hey, just so you know, there's a bear down there," so we stopped fishing. Needless to say, that gave us pause. So I've been in Alaska a lot, bear country a lot, and it's one thing you don't do is mess around with a bear. So we stayed up and looked from the bridge down the river and the growing darkness. We could see that the bear had actually moved, looking at its tracks. We could see that it had moved upstream, and we confirmed that by a couple that was on the beach taking pictures. There are no beaches in Juneau. It's just rock shore. And they said, no, the bear was there, but it went up upstream under the bridge and headed up the Sheep Creek. So we went down to the mouth. The tide was pretty much low, and literally walking in the water, you could have walked on the backs of thousands and thousands of chum salmon and pink salmon. The water, due to the tide at the mouth of the river, was maybe six inches deep in parts, except for a few holes. And you could not walk across the river, which is just coming up to mid-calf, without fish, almost stepping on fish. There were so many fish in the river, and these are salmon that have come up and to spawn and are drifting back out to die, or there are salmon that are still coming up to spawn. So, and at low tide, the riverbanks are just littered with countless numbers of salmon, and of course, seagulls are having a feast. Every bird is having a feast. Ravens, and that's why the bears come to the river. So it's a tidal river. When Gastineau Bay, the tide comes up, the river floods all the way up to the road. And when the tide is low, you can go out several hundred yards on the flats to the mouth of the river, which is what we did as it grew to be dark. And I really cannot exaggerate when I say you could have stepped on the backs of fish to cross the river. So we got down to a deeper pool where the fish, the pool was maybe 3 or 4 feet deep. And in the darkness, you could just hear the fish moving upstream. And I cast the big pink fly out and stripped it a few times and cast again and stripped it a few times and cast again. And 4 or 5 casts, suddenly I had a beautiful, hard-fighting dog salmon, or chum salmon, as they call on the fly. And, of course, it's almost pitch dark. It's 11:30 at night. And I can barely see the fish, and we're using the lights from our phone to illuminate the line and the fish as it's coming into shore. And I release it and hand the rod to my friend. And within a moment, he has the same experience. And 45 minutes of fishing, we land two beautiful fish, turn around and go back to our hotel just before midnight to begin the rest of our Alaska adventure, which starts with today's show. So that's how you can arrive in Juneau. No guide needed. Just a fishing rod, a pair of knee boots, and some luck. There are lots of fish, but the key is to get the right fly that they want to take. And we figured in the dark light that they would go for a chartreuse, very bright pink fly, and they did. So what else about Juneau? I have to talk a little bit about the cruise ship industry this morning. And many of you listening, I'm sure, have been on cruise ships, these monstrous floating hotels, which are taking over the world. And in the case of Alaska, taking over Southeast Alaska. And I will offer this thought. Not all is good with the cruise ship industry. In fact, I would ask the rhetorical question, do cruise ships care about the environment? And our passengers, those of us on cruise ships, who go on cruise ships, are we on an ecotourism cruise, or are we really on a cruise in which there is enormous environmental destruction? And I think that's the question for these monstrous cruise ships, whether it's Norwegian Cruise Lines, Disney Cruise Lines, Princess Cruise Lines, it doesn't matter. The population of Juneau is 32,000. In a five-month period from May through September, 1.4 million people will get off cruise ships and literally disgorge themselves from the boat into Juneau. Juneau is not very big, so the result is you're having really significant environmental consequences. First of all, it's great that you can get in helicopters and fly over the glaciers, but think about this, whirling helicopters all day long for 5 months, taking off and landing and coming out and flying over the glaciers and flying over the rivers and flying over everything and then coming back and landing and grabbing more passengers. Or think about the tour buses. There are, well, to move 6,000 people that get off some of these boats, it takes a lot of buses. And where do they all go? Most of them go to Mendenhall Glacier, which is about a 20-minute bus ride from the large cruise ship terminal in Juneau. And for those of you who've been here, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Well, the environmental consequences of almost over a million people coming to Mendenhall Glacier, to the U.S. Forest Service headquarters and to tour the glacier, was never anticipated. The visitor center at Mendenhall Glacier is beautiful. And it was maybe made for a couple hundred people to be in the visitor center all at once. Well, when a tour bus group arrives, it's 4,000 or 5,000 all at once. It's complete mayhem. The trails aren't made for it. The visitor center isn't made for it. The restroom facilities are not made for it. There are two ladies' restrooms in the visitor center in Mendenhall Glacier. And the lines, well, put it this way, lots of people didn't wait to stand in line. So you have to ask, are those individuals, those of us who come on these great cruises to see South Alaska, and whether it's Petersburg or Ketchikan or Sitka or Juneau, or whether we're going on further up the coast, are we aware of what's happening to the environment as a result of this crush of individuals? Certainly the residents of Juneau are aware, and a lot of them are not terribly happy. Cruise ships have been coming here for a long time. There's a seasonal business, which frankly, many will tell you keeps Juneau afloat. But there's very little thought to the environmental consequences of what these boats do. And as I talked to individuals who were walking the streets who had been on these boats, and I asked them what they knew about the environment of this part of the world, I got a lot of blank stares. And I wonder if it isn't incumbent upon the cruise ships, which are bringing all these individuals, all of us, to Alaska so we can experience the great Alaska from a boat, when they prepare to put 1,400,000 people ashore, is there not some responsibility to talk about what actually is happening in the environment? And the other thing about cruise ships, everybody eats all their meals on them. So when you are dumped off in Juneau, the restaurants don't benefit. It's a situation where individuals walk around town. Many of you may have done this. You buy things, or you just simply walk around, you get back on the boat and you leave, or you go to the glacier, you get on a helicopter, you get on a bicycle, you get on a walking trail. But there's very little actual business done, and certainly there are no hotel rooms being occupied. So the message I received from many residents and business owners in Juneau is, well, we liked a few tourists. We're not sure we like 1,000,004 unless you're selling trinkets and T-shirts and fake rings and things like that. And I'm not degrading that. I'm just simply saying that's what most of the shops seem to be. But if you're actually living in Juneau, it gets a little old. But from my perspective on the Great Outdoors Show, what really needs to be talked about is, do the cruise ships have a responsibility to the environment to give something back for all of the people that they are putting into the landscape who are placing serious challenges on the resources of these cities or towns that they're coming into. I guess Juneau is a town of 32,000, but it's the state capital, it's a city. They're putting tremendous strain on the environmental resources and their consequences. And the cruise ships simply untie from the docks and go back out to sea. And the next day, here come four more and do the same thing. 5 months, a lot of time, a lot of damage. It's a great industry. It's done wonders for the economy, but it's also challenging the environment. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show. And when I do, I'm going to talk about something that's happened in a place that you've heard me talk about for years, the Yazoo Basin of Mississippi. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And before I leave the subject of Juneau, Alaska, and the crush of the salmon run and the crush of the tourists from the cruise lines, I have one last comment that was made to me by a store owner in Juneau. And their comment was, I love seeing all these people come to visit our city, but I sure wish that they engaged a little bit in the heritage of Juneau and that they engaged in the culture and that they knew something about the environmental resources and the incredible natural wonders. They come into my store and they talk about how beautiful it is, but they don't talk about how to keep it beautiful. And I wonder if we aren't loving this to death out of ignorance. And that really struck me, loving it to death out of ignorance. Because 1,400,000 people is a lot of people in 5 months. And by and large, this is not an ecotourism business, the massive cruise ship business. This is strictly commerce. But maybe there should be an environmental conservation conscience in the cruise ship industry so that those of us coming to Alaska and enjoying the beauty of it understand what it takes to keep it and how it got here to begin with. So moving on to the Yazoo Basin in Mississippi, this is a story that began in 1987, long before I hosted the Great Outdoor Show, but Bill Cullerton in the 90s covered it frequently. John Huzarth, the Chicago Tribune, wrote about it frequently. So here we are in 2025. This is after the Corps of Engineers has absolutely destroyed the Mississippi Delta. From Memphis to Vicksburg, that 200-mile stretch of river, that 2.5 million acres that once was the largest hardwood forest in America, all gone. Or 99% is gone. There are a number of national wildlife refuges. The most important and the most well-known, the Yazoo National Wildlife Refuge, which was in pretty good shape in 1987, but by the mid-90s, the Corps of Engineers had destroyed it, taken out miles and miles and miles of virgin cypress, channelized the river, put in weirs that never worked, made lots of promises that were never kept. And if you think I'm being hard on the Corps of Engineers this morning, for what happened in the Yazoo Basin and what specifically happened in the Yazoo National Wildlife Refuge, it's been a national disgrace. And everyone who's been close to it, as I have for the past now nearly 40 years, knows just what a tragedy it has been to watch one of the best wildlife refuges in the country. And before it was a wildlife refuge, it was a famed hunting club, the Swan Lake Hunting Club, be completely destroyed. And my knowledge on this actually goes very deep because in 1987, I owned a farm that adjoined the Yazoo National Wildlife Refuge, and I, among others, received a letter of condemnation from the Corps of Engineers saying that they were going to happily take part of my farm, which had Black Bayou Creek running through it, and that they would pay me a pittance for the land that they were going to take. and know that they didn't care about the wildlife they were going to destroy. This was all about flood control, and thus began the entire national movement to save the Yazoo. John Huzar, Chicago Tribune was involved, Bill Cullerton was involved, WGN Radio, George Reiger, Field and Stream. Every national writer in the country took this as an opportunity to show how outdated the Corps of Engineers was and their philosophies. And actually, the result was the Corps of Engineers, under a lot of pressure, stopped the project and, quote unquote, reformed it before they then went ahead with a modified destruction project. So the other day, and the Yazoo Refuge was one of the most important wintering migratory waterfowl refuges in all of the Mississippi Flyway. So I've seen it in its glory. I've written about it, and I've seen its total destruction. Today, it's a disaster. Ducks don't use it. Cypress trees across are gone. The weirs the Corps of Engineers put in and the promise of creating great habitat never materialized. In fact, because the Yazoo Basin is in a swamp, I can't tell you how many times and how many tens of millions of dollars the Corps of Engineers has spent to put levees in to supposedly create backwater lakes, only to watch the levees sink to oblivion and have to rebuild them. But what happened this week is actually encouraging. Senator from Mississippi, Senator Hyde Smith, entered a resolution into the Senate condemning the Corps of Engineers for the destruction of the Yazoo National Wildlife Refuge, and wrote, "The Yazoo National Wildlife Refuge and the Theodore Roosevelt National Wildlife Complex were established to provide habitat for wintering waterfowl and resident wildlife. The committee is concerned these important refuges no longer meet their intended purpose due to a lack of adequate management and invasive aquatic plants, such as water hyacinth, which has taken over. And the committee directs the service to implement measures to restore, enhance, and better manage waterfowl habitat and wildlife on these refuges. And the service urges, and the Senate urges the Fish and Wildlife Service to partner with local managers and nonprofit conservation organizations." Isn't that wonderful? 40 years too late. I don't think you can rebuild it. I don't think you can take and put back what was there. In fact, I'm sure you can't. However, it's great to know that the senators of Mississippi, which 40 years ago were so for the destruction of the wildlife refuge, the Yazoo Wildlife Refuge, so that we could have better drainage in the Mississippi Delta and expand agriculture, are today saying, wow, we made a mistake. We need to restore this place. History repeats itself, and the Corps of Engineers needs to fix the Yazoo National Wildlife Refuge. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week with a report from having spent a week in Southeast Alaska. Thanks. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.